This is the October 3rd, 2014 edition of WFAE Talks. Hello, I'm Greg Collard, News Director at WFAE. This week, we'll discuss education. North Carolina's high school grading scale is changing.
Some parents and some students felt as if they were at a disadvantage when competing with students from other states where they did have 10-point scales.
And the results are in on the first year of North Carolina's third grade reading law known as Read to Achieve. We'll also discuss the College of Faith. It's a new online college in Charlotte with a football team that's not only winless but scoreless against NCAA schools. Joining me as usual is Lisa Worf, our education reporter. Still have trouble saying that. So Lisa Miller.
Well, I accidentally recorded something as Lisa Miller yesterday. So
did it go on the air that way?
No. Oh. I caught it.
Too bad.
So I am too.
That new voice you hear is Wendy Herkey. She is the executive director, or executive producer, I'm sorry. Executive producer of Charlotte Talks.
Happy to be here.
Of course.
Thanks for having me.
We're glad you're here. Ben is... what's his name?
Ben Bradford.
There you go.
He's in New York collecting a National Murrow Award.
Nice.
So
congratulations to him.
Yes.
Yes.
Glad to have you on. Of course, our name, we kind of ripped you off a little bit, WFA Talks, because Charlotte Talks was the established name, and trying to think of a name for a podcast. So we thought, well, let's just play off what you've already, the brand that's already established a little bit.
We'll let it slide.
WFA Talks. You had an event recently. You were out in the community where you went to Old Mecklenburg Brewery.
Yeah, last week we did a show on beer and on the beer industry, the craft beer industry in Charlotte, and how it's growing just exponentially over the past even just couple of years. So we were at Old Mecklenburg Brewery, which has just opened up a new location in Charlotte, and had a panel of people on. Mike interviewed him. We actually had a whole WFAE event on either side of the show, you know, sort of recorded the show in the middle of the event. And it was great. We talked about different kinds of beer, but about the industry and how just how there's room for more. And what was interesting to me was some of the guests talking who are really competitors. Mm-hmm. When you think about it, they're all trying to sell their local craft beers and how supportive they are of each other in their endeavors. But yeah, it was a great event. Beautiful night. It was good stuff.
And you were actually allowed to drink on the job, I believe.
Well, not during the show.
No. Okay.
Mike didn't have anything to drink during the show.
Not during the show. No, but before the show, we all tried something different.
Okay.
And after the show, while we were taken down, of course, you know, while we're putting everything away, we all had a beer with everybody. So no, it was great. It was a really fun event.
How many people came out?
Oh wow, It was hard. It's hard to tell how many were there for, you know, the event or how many were there for a Thursday night. It is incredible to me at this beer garden how many people they've got showing up, hundreds of people showing up, maybe happy hour on a Thursday night. But, you know, it looked like maybe about half of those people were there for WFAE. We got a lot of rounds of applause during the course of the event. So it was good.
Cool. Well, we'll have another, by the way, another public event coming up. It's in cooperation with... or partnership with NPR. Michelle Martin, NPR host, is going to be in town October 27th from 7 to 9 at the McGlowan Theater. And it's going to be a conversation on voting rights. Of course, it's been a big issue in North Carolina with the controversial voting law involving voter ID, although that was not part of this recent lawsuit. That'll be decided next year, but also has to do with counting out of precinct ballots. What else? Help me out here, Lisa.
Same day registration.
Same day registration.
The
yes.
two big things yes. that were put on hold for this election was same day registration. So that is back in the game. Mm-hmm. You can do that at this point. And counting out of precinct ballots. So in other words, if you go to the wrong precinct to vote, you are still given a ballot and you can fill it out and that ballot will count.
Justice Roberts or the full Supreme Court will decide whether to stay that ruling. We'll know that over the next couple days. But yes, for right now, everything pretty much stays the same under old voting law, except for there's still a fewer number of days with early voting. There's 10 days instead of 17 days, although there are the same amount of hours.
Yeah, nearly the same as 2010.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. So, Michael, this story came across, we were
Wednesday around 1,
yes,
I feel like it.
Yes.
Right after
We're his lunch with a job candidate. Got a call about this ruling coming down. Of course, it was sometimes it's just wish you could always control breaking news sometimes, but you know, you can't, you can determine it. But I guess that that's not how it works, unfortunately. They don't go on our schedule. But Michael was working on a story on the College of Faith. He was finishing it up, and then he's been covering this voting lawsuit for a while now, and so he had to shift gears and do that, and then he got some great coverage on All Things Considered in Morning Edition, and then late at night also managed to finish his story on College of Faith, and he earned some comp time, let's put it that way.
Yeah, he was probably mixing that into the wee hours.
Yes.
I bet. He's a fastidious mixer, too.
Yes, he is. So, College of Faith, this story is just, I don't know, it's fascinating, it's weird, it's intriguing.
Yes, it is intriguing.
It's the school that started in Charlotte last year. It's an online school. They offer degrees in two subjects, sports or ministry and sports ministry. They offer a four-year and two-year options in those degrees. And everyone, pretty much everyone at the school, it's an online school. They play football and not doing too well. They get Davidson snapped its 12-game losing streak at the beginning of this season. With a 56-0 win over College of Faith. That's the first time I ever heard of this school. And that kind of started us digging, what is this? What the heck is this school? And they've never scored a point against a four-year school. And it's just how they continue to football's expensive. How do they continue to operate is really interesting. The devotion that some of the kids have to continue going out and playing. Of course, the Christianity is a big part of the program too, and they say they want to just kind of help kids, give a second chance to kids. What are your observations on this story? I've talked enough about it.
I mean, it was mind-boggling to me, actually. You know, first of all, that I thought, well, maybe I wonder what tuition is, because you hear something like this in an online school that doesn't have any, you know, classroom instruction, that exists solely for football and religion, and you kind of wonder what is going on there. But you know, it sounds like the posted tuition is $6,000. But as Michael pointed out, the coach says, you know, it was, you know, kids are paying $500 for a whole year, and you know, they're playing games. They're getting a lot of coaching. I mean, in that, you know, they exist. I mean, part of it sounds like how they get their income too is, you know, these 4-year schools. Mm-hmm. Paying them money to play a game with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thousands of dollars, yeah.
Yeah, which I had no idea happened. Mm-hmm. But it was fascinating. And the kids, you know, really the athletes seem to really appreciate it. I mean, it's, you know, the coach, I believe, says, or the head of the school says, you know, this is a place where we give, you know, these are second chance students and athletes. You know, a lot of them have had difficulty in the past, and you know, they want to play football in one way or the other. So mm-hmm.
Have been kicked out of programs.
Have been kicked out.
This is their last chance, that kind of thing. I think it's kind of a lesson in resilience, that they can keep going on and keep losing all the time and really keep coming back to it and saying that this is, you know, something that's great in their lives. And I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, they play North Georgia Sports Academy, which is not, I'm going to assume it's not an NCAA school this weekend. So maybe they'll get their first win. But I'll have to admit, I first heard about this story, I was very skeptical. Mm-hmm. Why? How they have to be making money somehow. We didn't see the evidence of them making money, that's for sure.
Hand-me-down helmets, chipped helmets, hand-me-down equipment, yeah. And playing at an abandoned middle school or something, middle school field.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And they, it's just some weird scenes. They go in to maybe get caught up on some work maybe in some room and view game tape and plop down their football equipment in this one little classroom.
As far as the skepticism too, we were talking about this, and I said, well, let me just go ahead. I'm part of a writing listserv, education writers listserv. And so let me just go ahead and pull, you know, some of the higher ed people about stuff like this, if they've heard of anything like this. And I mean, they did come back. I heard from a couple of people saying, hey, we had some kind of program set up along these lines that existed solely for football, and it seemed like a, you know, like a racket in that regard. But you know, in this case, as you said, Greg, it was hard to see any evidence of that happening here.
They do get paid by some schools to play, and this happens across college football. Division I schools will also mm-hmm. often have a lower division school, what used to be 1AA. I forget what they call it now, but anyway, you'll see that happen where they pay him a couple $100,000, and mm-hmm. the idea is we get an easy win, they get exposure, they get experience, and all that. Same thing's happening here on a different level.
Smaller scale.
Tusculum College in Tennessee paid him $7,500. Davidson paid him they didn't disclose the exact amount, but it's a smaller amount. But running a football program is expensive. That's certainly not raking in the dough. Everything seemed sincere about it, the motives in establishing this program. Mm-hmm. And I didn't expect that starting out, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see down the road whether they win a game at some point, whether they have some people, because they haven't had anyone graduate from the school yet, right?
No, they have not. Yeah,
so that'll be interesting to see what the success is long term.
Yes.
So. And, you know, if you graduate, it is unaccredited. So, you know,
That's the one thing that is, yeah, what is the point in this if they get, okay, they get a degree, what is the value of that degree?
There's no value if it's not, wow. You know, there's no outside value along besides your sort of, they would say, personal growth probably. But mm-hmm. as an employer, it's kind of hard to recognize a unaccredited school.
All right. Next story or stories, education, always a big topic on this program and on our air. It's going to be easier to get an A.
It will be. Yes, it will be indeed. So right now, you have to have a score of at least a 93% to get an A, mm-hmm. and 85% at least to get a B. It's called the 7-point scale, you know, moves on down. Mm-hmm. It's been this way for many years, but there have been a lot of complaints to the Department of Public Instruction from parents, from students, from district superintendents, even CMS Superintendent Heath Morrison. They've all said, hey, you got to change this. We want a 10-point scale. So a 90 and above would be an A in this case, you know, 80 above a B. And actually, it would be easier to pass too. 60 and above would be passing. And the idea is that many other states operate in this way. And so when you're applying for a college and you have an 84, which shows up as a C on your transcript, while, you know, some student in Atlanta, for example, has an 84 and it's showing up as a B, that, you know, it mm-hmm. puts you at a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. So the State Board of Education agreed and unanimously passed it yesterday. And wow. this would go into effect for next year's freshman class.
Yes. I brought this up to my son, who's a freshman.
Yes.
So they're changing the scale. He got all excited. Really? That's how it should be? And I said, well, you're not included. And he could just see his, he was deflated. It was kind of cruel.
Yeah.
So I was kind of hoping to get that reaction out of them.
Yeah, there's going to be some griping high school students next year as they work off of two different grading scales. And they might be in the same class too, would be
that's
difficult.
That is true. Yeah, there'll be a lot of classes where they're being the same.
Uh huh.
So. Are there concerns with grade inflation? I'm sure teachers hear about this already, and maybe they go a little bit easier on someone to help them get that little nudge to get a B, knowing that there's competing against. I'm asking if that was ever.
Well, I mean,
that
that's a thing. You reset a grading scale. You know, how much do you really reset then your standards too? And I wasn't there for the main discussion on this. This was at the board meeting, I think last month when they had the main discussion. But yes, there is a concern that this will lead to grade inflation, and mm-hmm. that, you know, it'll just be too much easier to pass and whatnot. And You know, I don't have a real fair analysis to look at that. But I mean, one of the things they do say, Superintendent June Atkinson said yesterday, is that they are going to have a transcript. They'll have both the numerical score.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll have, you know, whether you scored an A, B, C, D, whether you have a GPA of 4.0, 3.0, whatnot. But then you'll actually see the score that it took to get that grade. So you'll see if it's an easy A or, you know, something that was, you know, 99%, mm-hmm. for example. So
what would you like to see? I kind of like this change as a parent. What about you, Wendy?
My kids will keep the same thing. They don't go to CMS schools, but I actually would like to see a 10-point scale there.
Yeah,
I mean, it's what I had when I was growing up, and it is frustrating to have your child come home with a 93, and you're like, "Hey, good job," and it's a B.
Yeah,
and or you know, because I think theirs is a 94 is an A at the particular school that they go to, or to get something in the 80s and have it be a C, and that's pretty disappointing for them.
It doesn't feel right, and then especially if it's something where, you know, 20 points or there's 20 questions and it's a 90. They miss two and they do pretty well and it's a B. And I don't know. It just doesn't feel right to me as a parent.
Sure. I mean, the thing too is that there will be no plus or minuses, which I kind of like plus or minuses. You know, that tells you real easily if it was a high B or a low B.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's valid information.
Bubble,
But it's just going to be straight grades. And of course, middle school and elementary school, the local boards of education will still have their say-so over that. But high school, this is how it's going to work.
Hmm.
Well, other big news to come out of the State Board of Education meetings this week, which were actually in Charlotte instead of Raleigh.
I know. It was nice. I often listen online to those state board meetings, and it was nice to actually be in the room and see the people as they spoke. And get a sense of the dynamics and chemistry of that room. So, it was fun, just across the street in UNC Charlotte.
Well, they talked about reading, Read to Achieve, the results of the third grade reading law, and CMS didn't do. How did CMS do? They didn't do too well, right? In this,
no, they lagged far behind the state. So the state had they had 12.7% of students, third graders, being retained this year. So either that means they were held back because they didn't pass all the reading tests they needed to, or they're going on to fourth grade, but they have what's called a retained label on them, which means they get 90 minutes of concentrated reading instruction every day. Now, most of those students, it sounds like, will probably be under the retained label. CMS had about 18% of its students fall into that category. Wake County, just for some comparison, had, I think, 9 or 10%. So it was a lot more.
What do they say and how many the students went to the required reading camps this summer? What was the success or failure rate of those?
Sure. This was interesting too, because you got a feeling for how many kids throughout the state went into the summer reading camp. So what happens if you did not pass all these different tests as a third grader, then you had to go to a summer reading camp. And I believe out of that number of kids in CMS who went to summer reading camps, about 6% of them by the end of the camp were reading at grade level and could go directly without a label to fourth grade. And that ranged throughout the state, I believe, from, you know, 6% was one of the lower ones, I believe. You know, it ranged maybe, you know, there were some that were 15% or so. 18%.
Did that seem to surprise?
That's what I was wondering. Yeah. Was that expected?
Yeah, and I don't have a good estimation of that. I have to say, when I looked at the numbers, I was surprised at 6%. But, you know, of course, if kids are going into the summer reading camps much further behind than other students, and CMS does have a lot of low-income disadvantaged students, then it's going to be harder to get them up to grade level in that time. But it was also interesting in this report that came out, they did all these surveys. They surveyed hundreds of teachers and principals. They surveyed superintendents as well about their thoughts on the Read to Achieve law. And many, many of them said that they felt that all the assessments were taking away from instruction time, which there are a lot of assessments. And of course, it was the first year, you know, there were major problems with it. And that was... that was noted in the report as well. But this year they're trying to make some tweaks, trying to get it under control. So it'll be interesting to see how that comes about. But you know, one of the big things too is as the State Board is looking at budgets and what they want as a budget request, they're taking into account some of this survey information. And one of the things they've heard back is that they really need reading coaches at, you know, all these elementary schools to make this work effectively.
Wendy, it just occurred to me, I forgot to mention something earlier, the upcoming show. And I had a perfect segue with we were talking about College of Faith and college football. You have a show next week on college football.
Yeah, well, and on whether athletes, college athletes, should be paid. You know, and that's a debate that's been, you know, going on here and there. You know, we've heard a lot about it. But the Charlotte Observer is actually having a forum on this topic coming up late next week, I believe. So we're going to be talking with Scott Fowler from the Charlotte Observer. Judy Rose from UNC Charlotte is going to be on to talk about it from her perspective. And we'll talk about college sports and whether or not they should be paid. I mean, there's been a lot of back and forth and some very strong opinions on one side or another on that. So we'll have a conversation about what they think and what some of the experts think.
All right. That's going to be Monday at 9 o'clock on Charlotte Talks. All right. That wraps up this week's show. Wendy, thanks for joining us. How was your experience on WFA Talks for the first time?
Beyond compare. It was great. Okay. It was wonderful. Great experience.
Wendy is very positive.
We'd love to come back.
Okay. Thanks, guys.